Hey guys, it's Jessica, founder of Noonday Collection. Welcome to the You Matter podcast. On this podcast, I want you to get ready to be inspired to be more courageous and to own your worth. Get ready to feel connected to the artisan community and to the community where you have a place of belonging, the ambassador community. Because the truth is, you matter, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to the conversation. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of You Matter. I'm Katie McCauley, Noonday's Community Manager, and I'm so glad you're joining the conversation today. Before we dive into our episode, I wanted to take a minute to talk about last week. You all heard from Jessica as she interviewed her therapist about beauty and body image, and man, it really resonated with so many of you. I was personally incredibly moved by what so many of you chose to share in solidarity. And it just goes to show that this is something every woman understands in some way. And even in our struggles, we're connected. Just to share a couple of snippets from our Facebook group, Katie Landgraf said, "The things that make each of us different are part of what makes the world such a fascinatingly diverse place. But it's so much easier to appreciate the uniqueness in others than it is in ourselves. I don't expect or want others to conform to our narrow standards of beauty. So why should I expect that from myself? This is the question I'm contemplating on today's leg of my journey towards self-acceptance." Celeste Chapko opened up on the Facebook group in a very vulnerable way as well, sharing her journey with body image, postpartum depression, and prioritizing her mental health. Some of what she shared: "So for now, this is my story. This is my journey. My weight does not define me. The way I look does not determine my worth as a wife, mother, friend, or ambassador. I matter, and whatever your story is, you matter." Thank you, Katie and Celeste, and all of those of you who shared your reflections on the last episode and the larger conversation of self-worth. There's that saying that the most powerful words are "me too," and this is total proof. And you're creating such a space of belonging for other women by opening up and sharing your own story about this issue. So here we are today. And we have an inspiring and fun interview with some home office team members to share with you. And it's about Kenya. Our work with the Kenyan artisan groups is something that we've been really excited to share more about. And we know so many of you have been asking for this. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you all think. So on to today's show. Today, I'm sitting down with Jessica Honegger, our founder and CEO that you all know and love, Laura Morton, our creative director, and Tamara Aklilu, our manager of sourcing and production with our artisan partners. So today, we're talking about Kenya. Thanks for being here, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
And so, as you've seen in the lookbook, there's a lot of inspiration from this African safari and a lot of influence from Kenya, and there's even a great spread about our work with our Kenyan partners. And we really wanted to sit down to talk today about where that inspiration comes from and how we've expanded into working with this group and just shed some light on that. So Jessica, how did we enter into working with Kenyan artisans?
Yeah, so I went to Kenya at first when I think I was a sophomore in high school. And this was definitely pre-millennial days because now I'm sure everybody's doing it, right? And our kids are going to start going to Africa when they're like 10. but I went, and that's where I saw poverty for the first time. And I never will forget seeing a woman running this brightly colored fruit stand. And my Kenyan friend explained to me that because of her job getting a microcredit loan, she was able to get out of an abusive marriage with her husband and now provide for her 5 children by running this business. And that's when it really dawned on me how business really could be a part of social change. It really could be a part of social good. And then I just loved Kenya. And I went back. I came home. It's so funny. Like, I came home that year and my mom was a little bit appalled because suddenly I became this like super activist, like this radical, like, I am not going to buy clothes anymore. I'm not going to, you know, put makeup on. She would like, I got nominated for homecoming and she like literally ran after me out the front door trying to chase me down with a blush brush. And it really had a profound impact on my life and on sort of the trajectory of my life. And so it's a country that I've always wanted to work in. It's a hole we've had in our line of this handmade brass work. Mm-hmm. And I knew that Kenya was just a spot where artisans were needing more work. It's also been, you know, I know Tamar, you'll talk more about this, how it's really been impacted because of terrorism. The economy, the tourism economy, yes, has really been impacted the last couple of years. It's just been a traditionally a very unstable economy. And so knowing that we could send brave Tamara, I think you were actually, was it before or after? There was like a major terrorist attack. And it was it right after you came
home
or during?
A little after, yeah.
A little after, but we were like, well, I don't know. We can
attack at the mall.
The attack at the mall. That's right.
And I actually met with a friend who was there at the mall when I was on one of these trips.
Yes.
And she was telling me her story.
Yeah. It's been traditionally a hard place, but a place that's known for its craftsmanship.
Yeah.
And so it was a couple years ago what we were like, Tamara, we are sending you to Kenya. Go henceforth and find us some partners.
Just a small task, you know.
A small task. And there are a few people that we could just send to a country. It's what we did in Ecuador too. We're like, go find us some partners. Mm-hmm. So how, like, I want to hear more about that. Like, how did you kind of go about doing that?
Well, so that was October 2014, and I was consulting for Noonday, and that was really one of my favorite things about working for Noonday, and still is when I get to do scouting trips. So it's really open-ended. Go and meet artisans and report back what you find, and we'll check it out. So before I went, I did some research on a few different groups, and I had spent time in Kenya before, and I had actually visited artisan groups when I was living in Ethiopia and running in Toto. So I had a few ideas of my own. Karen gave me a couple ideas. One of the ones that we ended up working with, Bawa, was a group that Karen had met in Ambiente. It's this sort of trade show in Germany. And then Jessica was really in love with their metals. So that was one that we were very keen on meeting with right away. I kind of set up appointments and I went to a bunch of different groups. I think I checked out 6 or 7 different groups the first time and came back and just kind of reported on them, and we kind of analyzed them. And I can give you some insight a little bit into what we're looking for and how we kind of choose these groups. So definitely we're looking for strong leadership. I mean, the integrity of the leader is one of the most important things for me, because that means you can trust what they're saying in terms of that they will deliver on time, that they have the capacity they say they have, and also that they're paying what they say they're paying and really doing things in a fair way. It also means that you can negotiate with them easily and that the relationship will be very positive if you have a great social leader who has this vision, the same vision that Noonday has, if they share that vision for the flourishing world. Mm-hmm. And so since we've had our flourishing world spelled out in everything for us, I've been sharing that with every group, even when I'm just scouting, because it helps them to know what we're about, and then they can decide if they're really aligned, and you can kind of hear in their voice and the way they talk about it, if they're really excited, like, yes, yes, that is what I'm all about. Mm-hmm. You just know, like, this is going to be a great partnership.
That's so true. And so, okay, so you come back. She mm-hmm. had, like, loads of stuff. And
that's so fun, by the way.
It is fun. And the home office gets to take full advantage, because we have these things called sample sales mm-hmm. where we end up selling a lot of the things that we curate from around the world when we're just scouting or just doing research, really, mm-hmm. design research. So you came in with a suitcase full of stuff. We might have some belts and, oh my gosh, we have some cool stuff.
I'll post some stuff
on Instagram later. Some of the stuff that you came mm-hmm. back with, bags and all sorts of things. And then what did you do from there? Like, what was the process then, this discovery process when, you know, we're sort of entertaining this idea of like, okay, we want to have an impact in this country. How do we then test if they're going to be able to deliver to our customers?
So right away in the first meetings that I have with them, I let them know that, you know, we are looking for new partners, and but we're not promising anything. And so, like, we just sit down and have a conversation about how they do their pricing, how they pay their artisans, and generally where they source things from, which is also important. And then how many artisans they have, how, in general, how many products they produce in a month, how many they could, how much they can scale up. And so I come back with that kind of information. So we have a general idea about their capacity, and we can match that up with our need and see, oh, is this going to work? Are they going to be able to deliver now, or will they need a little bit of scaling up, or
what are their cash needs? Because sometimes yes. we need to provide more cash than we would normally for yeah. raw materials.
And sure. Yep. Or even if they need to scale up and they need some advance to help them be able to train more artisans or buy any more equipment or anything like that. Those are things that we consider. So that's part of the process.
I think that's really cool too, because just having conversations with artisans there, you understand that Noonday's orders are significant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That, yeah. you know, the first thing we have to talk about is, do you have the capacity? Because we have the ability to sell a lot, and they get super excited
yeah.
about that.
Yeah, they do.
But I was impressed with that when I went, that, you know, we aren't just, you know, oh, some person they meet and maybe this will happen and be like this little blip in their business. It's mm-hmm. like they get excited. It's a big deal what Noonday's doing.
Well, and it probably shows them how serious we are, and that yes. it really is a partnership and it's a commitment. And yeah, exactly what you were saying.
Well, sure. yeah, because I would say it was like a year and a half, because then we came back and then we got our design team to begin to design. And then we sent those tech packs. That's mm-hmm. tech packs are what we call when we're in the collaborative design process. The design team will meet together mm-hmm. and we'll sort of look through inspiration, and then we kind of are like, okay, let's do something that's inspired by this, and then the team will spec up, you know, what that looks like, and then send it off to the group, because it's really important that the groups are able to execute even that. That's like step number one. Can they yes. create a sample?
Mm-hmm. Can they follow the tech packs, and then will they collaborate with us and let us know what they can and can't do? So we did that tech pack process between October of 2014 and March of 2015. So I actually went back in March of 2015. And in those first meetings, we also talked about their social programs and things like that. But this is more of the test of, you know, can they deliver on the actual product? So we had narrowed it down to about four groups then by that time that we sent spec packs to, tech packs. And so then I went and visited, looked at like what they had done and what they can do and additional materials. And then we kind of started that collaboration, and they started working with the designers as well. But you're right. It wasn't until November of 2015 that they started producing for Spring 16, their first real designs that were going to go in the lookbook.
Right.
Do you find that whenever you're in that tech pack phase and you're starting to collaborate with that group, that you feel that their trust is building with us, of like, oh, they want my input, and I really am able to communicate what I think would do well here, and this is really a partnership.
Yeah, definitely. They love to be able to be part of that conversation mm-hmm. in the design process. But they also, those tech packs, like, give them confidence that we're really serious about them, mm-hmm. that we're going to buy from them.
The same time, I feel like that's part of the testing phase.
Yeah.
Because we want them to treat us very seriously during that phase mm-hmm. because they really know we're in business when they see our first purchase order, our yeah. PO. And then they're like, okay.
It's coming.
Yeah. And then they really trust us when it's like they see the second PO, yeah. right?
Reorders. They get so excited when they see the potential. Even in the beginning when I'm showing them the lookbook and telling them how many ambassadors we have, they are blown away. They're like, oh my gosh, the potential is That's amazing. Cool. You have like nearly 1,000 ambassadors. That's so huge for us.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, because it's like, this is the courtship of a business deal, right? So mm-hmm. we're looking to see, like, if, you know, if you come up to someone and say, hey, can you do this exciting thing? Probably they'll just say, yes, I would yeah. do it. yes, yeah. I would do that. But then at the end of the day, let's get down to actual nitty gritty work. And can you do this thing that you're mm-hmm. excited about? So this is that phase.
It is that phase. I mean, we're still in the testing phase in yes. a lot of ways. So even though, you know, they're in the lookbook and you guys are rocking their stuff, and, you know, some of the items have done really, really well, we're still in that phase of like taking it deeper. So we do that by not giving them too many SKUs.
Okay, right.
You know, not making sure that their quantities are staying in an amount that is still manageable, mm-hmm. and making sure that they are really going to be able to deliver over the long term. But we scaled it down to two groups, BAWA and Trinity.
Right.
So tell me more about how you found Trinity, and then I want to hear Laura's perspective, because she and I went to Kenya together in the fall, mm-hmm. and that's when she was able to kind of see that group for the first time. So, yeah, how did we find them?
Well, I actually knew Joseph from Trinity previously, so I just knew he was solid. Mm-hmm. I knew this was one of the groups that was going to have real potential, just because he's been in the business for like 30 years, and he knows fair trade backwards and forwards. He knows his materials, his metals, and he's really cautious. Mm-hmm. Like, the way he hires on, he keeps a small amount of guys busy full time.
And women. He has women.
Yeah, he has some women. Yeah, you're right. But the way he works with them, he has regular meetings with them and really helps them feel involved with all the decision making, even when they need to scale back and scale up. Everyone's really on board with that. And I love how he does that. So that was one of the reasons that I loved him. And he just has amazing capacity to deliver.
Yeah.
And I think there's actually a blog about him on Flourish right now if you want to go learn more about him, if you're listening and that piques your interest.
And his picture's in the lookbook. He's yes. pictured in the Kenya spread.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Lookbook.
That's awesome. And then BAWA, I know Karen talked to them mm-hmm. at the show in Germany.
Yes.
And then how did we decide to enter into this test phase with Anna? Do we call Anna or Anne? We just say Anne.
Yeah. Anne and Andrew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess one of the reasons that we chose them was especially because of the materials that they're working with. So they have the social aspect of the business. They're really employing people from Kibera area and another neighborhood called Rongai, and giving great opportunities to those people. So we loved that. We loved that they're a new group that we could really help build up, because so in contrast to Trinity, which has been around for like 30 years, these guys are really new to fair trade and to this business and everything, but they show huge potential. Mm-hmm. And the leadership seems really solid. We love Anne and Andrew.
They are so awesome.
Yeah.
Anne and Andrew. And I want this partnership to deepen, just because I'm like, I hope someday that she could be a part of coming to
shine.
Yeah. So when we went in the fall, Jessica and I landed in Kenya, and normally an artisan partner meets us at the airport. So this time it was Anne, mm-hmm. and we got off the plane and find our bags, and it's, you know, always feels really chaotic and like, here I am. I hope, you know, something happens. And Anne met us, and my first impression of her was just like, who is this awesome chick? Like, she was wearing a full-on pantsuit jumper, like, her hair is super cute, yes, she's wearing awesome jewelry, and that I was just like, yes, this is one of those, sisters across the world that I'm super excited to get to hang out with. And they do, they just have an amazing vision. I feel like they're kind of, like, scrappy, creative visionaries.
Well, mm-hmm. and Anne's mom she grew up around artisan business, because Anne's mom worked with basket weavers. Mm-hmm. So it's something that she's been around and that she really believes in. And then the market started going into this brass, you know, and so they started off with baskets and then really needed to follow the trend of the market, because they were seeing the basket sales were declining. So mm-hmm. they're like, okay, well, what can we, and then they saw the brass market increasing. So that's kind of how they began to go and do that.
The thing that I notice as I learn more about our artisan partners, it always seems like there's this history of entrepreneurship mm-hmm. in their family and in their background. Not always, but a lot of times. And so it's cool to see that that's where the BAWA group came from too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's definitely, I think that speaks back to what Tamara was saying, looking to see the qualities in the leadership, uh-huh. because so much mm-hmm. of it is about that leadership. Are they going to take initiative? Are they going to be able to collaborate with us? And are they serious about their business?
Yeah, I love that adaptability, mm-hmm. that they can shift with the trends and that they can follow along with what the Western world is really asking for from Kenya at the time. You know, that's really cool that they're able to harness the artisan skills there in a way that really works financially, you know, in a business sense. This girl is up. Girl boss. Like, mm-hmm. this team is great. Like, they really know their stuff.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was cool too, Ann and Andrew, when we were driving out of the airport, we were, you know, chatting, talking about the connections and everything. And they mentioned the conference in Germany where they had met someone from Noonday. And, you know, we were talking about conferences and just kind of like, you know, talk of the industry. And Jessica asked, she said, oh, well, did you think that that conference going to Germany was worth it for you? Because it's, you know, a time and money investment. And they said, well, yeah, we met you. And again, I feel like that is another thing of just showing how Noonday is seen as, you know, we have significant orders. Mm-hmm. We are someone that people are excited to work with. And we have the potential to help Anne and Andrew grow their business, just like we're growing.
Well, and it's cool, too, because when they heard that we were working with Trinity, they were like, oh, wow, we've heard of Trinity, you know? So I do think there's potential there even for mentorship. Sure. And I think that's part of the future vision of Noonday is that – and it started happening at Shine, y'all. It's so cool just to hear how – because the product team took – Anna from Guatemala and took Jaya from Uganda and Cherry from Ethiopia on a shopping trip to go look at trends and to go see what's going on in the market. And already there was this exchange of ideas. Well, this is how we do scarves or this is how we make this. And we want to see that more and more, like even someday maybe have an artisan conference that's just to gather our artisan partners together in this great like leadership development and
meeting, you know, minds.
Meeting of the minds. And so I see the potential there because, you know, Joseph, again, it's like two totally different generations that we're working with in Kenya. But Joseph's story is so powerful in that he grew up. I will never forget, we were sitting at lunch with him, Laura and I, and we were talking about the presidents of Kenya, and he's like, well, this is our third president, you know?
Ever.
Oh,
my gosh.
Because it's such a new nation. And, again, it's that
– presidents tend to stick around.
Yes,
that's
well, yeah.
That's
I think that I think the current president's been around for, like, 40 years.
Yeah.
There's a whole
other issue.
Still, he could name – but he remembered Independence Day when Kenya won independence from England.
That's amazing.
And so just to hear his story about how a nun identified him, he used to be bootleg alcohol is what his mom did. He didn't have a father, and she would make this bootleg alcohol, and his job was to stand on the corner and warn his mom if a police was coming so he could go say, shut it down, shut it down. And so in the middle of that slum, a nun really identified him. And again, this speaks so much to the power of what happens when someone believes in you and the power that we have at Noonday Collection when we believe in a hostess and we say, no, I believe in you and I know you want to make an impact and you will have friends and people will show up.
And I see it in you already.
And I see it in you. And, you know, and or I think about how Travis believed in me. You know, he went salary free and he quit his job in order to see that. And there's so I feel like I hear that story so much when we're meeting with artisans around the world. At some point in their lives, someone believed in them. Like for Daniel, it was his aunt put him through school. You know, Jaya, her parents really did ultimately believe in her. You know, even though her dad kind of went through it was a rough phase in there. But
well, and I see a theme. It's women believing in these people too, which is cool. Like even as women, like we have that opportunity. I think even more so, it's kind of like that feminine power that you can harness of like your words have power in them to help someone believe in themselves, and it's probably. It probably means something because you're a woman, too.
Yeah.
There's power in that.
Yeah, especially in those cultures. But we visited Joseph's workshop. So, Laura, I wanted to hear your perspective because Laura, I went to visit Laura. Laura lived in Uganda for a couple of years, and it was 7 years ago now, maybe, around this time. I went to go visit Laura. My husband and I did on a pastoral trip.
They brought me queso and tortilla chips because I was having a hard time.
Yeah.
And they're amazing.
That's what I do for my friends. If you've ever seen queso, tortilla chips, People Magazine, and I usually throw like hot tamales or Sour Patch Kids or something.
It was amazing.
Yes. And so Laura, you know, was living in Uganda and I would love to hear more. You come from this more nonprofit background in Uganda. And how have you seen the difference with like a model of Noonday and kind of getting to see that side of Africa by going on a trip with Noonday as opposed to kind of your experience before when you were working for a not-for-profit?
Yeah. So when I was there, I was working on a design team of a nonprofit, and Jessica came to see me, and, you know, as any nonprofit goes, and honestly, as Noonday, any starting business goes, everyone does a little bit of everything. So as a designer, I was doing graphic design, and they had a program to help women make jewelry. So I was helping, trying to design some of the jewelry. Not that that's really my strong suit at all, but sourcing materials. It was the first time I saw, like, oh, we can't get clasps in Uganda that are worth anything. So we have to, like, bring those into the country to put on these natural materials to make the quality higher. So it's kind of learning all those lessons and loving what I could just go buy in the market. You know, there were so many things to kind of visually grasp there. So Jessica came and we went shopping together, and she was, you know, just like, I love this jewelry. And that's when she met Downey, who, you know, gave her the first big pile of jewelry that she sold. So I kind of thought Jessica was crazy, put her back on that plane with all that jewelry. It was like, cool, good luck with that. So yeah, that was a really different experience. You know, we were shopping together. I was seeing kind of the nonprofit I was working for struggle for quality. Mm-hmm. They were doing a great job of having kind of business acumen classes for women and having them do these jobs to help develop them. But there was just a lot that I had no idea, you know, like this bracelet will only fit on a child's wrist. So no, you can't do it. You know, things that you kind of don't think about being a problem, but that people really have to develop the skills for. So there was a lot of that struggle. And then, you know, we were just trying to have it sell magically through our website, you know, like how do you move product? You're wanting to keep people busy and working, but then you literally are standing on a mountain of, you know, bracelets or whatever. So that was my experience then. And it was amazing to come back with Jessica to Africa, the first time we traveled to Africa again together, and have such a clear purpose. I think it's so amazing with Noonday to, I mean, there's a lot of things that you can see when you take trips like this that you want to fix, you want to help.
And it's hard.
Especially from a Western perspective, you drop it and it's like, oh, I want to make everything better for everyone in the world. It can be really overwhelming, but I love that when we're going with Noonday, there's a purpose and it's very clear and it's a holistic approach. It's not that we engage these partners and then maybe we can sell some stuff and then it goes away. It's like, no, there's a very clear plan and it's a business centered plan that will make sense and therefore sustain itself, that we develop these artists and partners really intentionally. We're looking for, you know, like I was saying, like the courtship of business, like we're looking to invest and then have them invest back, which is such an empowering model. Like if we do this work, what work will you do and how can that impact the communities around you? So I think that's exciting. And I love with Noonday that we get to interact with these like thought leaders in their countries. Mm-hmm. I feel like every person on these trips that we come across just has an amazing story.
Yeah.
And and I love the peer aspect too, that there's all these people, like Anne is kind of like, reminds me of Jessica when she was like, I can just do this thing that, you know, I can make this happen. Mm-hmm. And she's building her business and making it happen. She's stepping up. And just seeing that, you know, this is nothing to do with like, kind of like there can be this model of like, oh, well, I'll just help you because I'm the one, you know, coming from the West with all the answers. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I want to learn from
teach
you.
We're leaning.
You're amazing.
Yeah, we're leaning on them.
Yeah. It's a true partnership. It's a true peer exchange of like understanding each other and going into this amazing relationship together.
Well, and my favorite part too, like I remember when we were at Joseph's workshop and getting to explain the ambassador model. Mm-hmm. Because even though Trinity's been around for 30 years and has been primarily providing to Serve and to 10,000 Villages, they'd never created product for a direct sales company. And so it was so cool to get out our lookbook, show them some of our ambassadors, talk about how you guys are creating income opportunities for women in America. People always burst out clapping when they hear it. Oh, yeah,
that's cool.
Burst out clapping.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really powerful too. It's another reason that we like to, you know, it's another reason these trips are so important. Like not just the production trips and the design trips, but just the relational trips, the trips we go on this summer. They're so important so that artisans really understand who their end customer is and what they're doing to create value for our ambassadors and for the customers of our ambassadors. It's a really unique ecosystem that oftentimes they've never been exposed to. So,
yeah.
It's really cool.
One of the things I love about your background too, Laura, that I remember you shared with me when you first came here is that when you were working at this not-for-profit, you kind of had this interaction with sort of this new generation. you know, it was young adults who had opportunity for education, and they were pursuing that education and also pursuing kind of a new generation of business in the country that they were in. And I feel like you've been able to see firsthand, you know, kind of like Ann and Andrew, they're forward thinking, they're this new generation of Kenyans, and moving their artisan business in that direction of, you know, traditional and new marketing. And, you know, it's not this rustic, like necessarily like in this village all the time. Mm-hmm. And you've been able to see that firsthand too. And you've seen how that can be so empowering. And it's kind of like there's opportunity for both, like Joseph, and he's had this long history mm-hmm. of this traditional business. And there's ways to include him and teach mm-hmm. him and learn from him as well. And then there's opportunity to elevate businesses like Ann and Andrew.
Well, I think that's a really good point. Because I feel like with Joseph and Trinity, what we're doing is he's like, oh, we've never done this before.
Uh-huh.
We're introducing new types of beads and techniques and designs that he is so excited about, because mm-hmm. some of the other companies he produces for are just kind of churn and burn, very basic, you know, stuff, where ours are a little bit more high fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of pushing him towards the fashion end of things and the design end of things. But then Ann and Andrew, they're pushing us. Like, they have got really cool design ideas, but they don't have the market.
Right.
Because you have these young Kenyans, these young East Africans that did get an education, but they don't have work.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're absolutely like a peer group, you know? Like, I think you can imagine this girl in Nairobi who has a job and, you know, that are like moms who are driving their kids around to school and daycare mm-hmm. pickup. And, I mean, these are things that are happening in, like, city life in East Africa. And I just love that aspect that, you know, it's the thing we quote Jen Hatmaker, or uh-huh. who was it?
Yeah, yeah. That we're more alike.
We love your quote. Yeah, we're alike, but we're different, but we're also alike.
We're also the same, yeah.
And yeah, I really see that in these relationships that we're interacting with business people, mm-hmm. that we're business people in America interacting with business people. And also just seeing now that there's, especially with, you know, Facebook, we're all online, we're all on social media, like POMA's social media account is amazing. They're like all over it.
Yeah.
But, and you know, my friends, when I was living in Kampala, like they're looking at blogs and fashion trends, and things are trending there that aren't trending here. There was like a big crochet beanie trend going on in Kampala. And just that, you know, also the fashion aspect of this is something that these business people get, understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like people like Anne, I think particularly, are like stylish women. Like mm-hmm. they understand that whole aspect as well. And we're a huge resource for them because we're connecting them to the current trends where we are.
Well, it's kind of what we talk about in our Flourishing World spread in the lift book, just how we are creating opportunity for artists and entrepreneurs so that they can then really pour into these artisans.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's that artisan entrepreneur. It's the business owner. I mean, those are the ones that we're really developing those long-term partnerships with so that we can really help them create something sustainable for the artisans they're wanting to impact in their community.
And something that's still true to them and their desires and their vision.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's why it's the first thing that we look for and one of the most important, just that vision and that character mm-hmm. and just being a thought leader in their community mm-hmm. that people look up to. These are people that are really changing their communities and their generation. Mm-hmm. And that's so exciting to be part of.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph has a really cool too. I think Jessica and I were immediately impressed when we went to Trinity. He has a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So it sits in a neighborhood that he described to us as transitional. So he said this neighborhood that we're in, you know, where the workshop is, it's not Kabira slum, but
right.
it's also not like the ritzy part of town. This is kind of working people.
Just like his artisans that are that have come out of the slums and they're up and coming and they're hardworking, but you know, they haven't arrived yet.
Now it still looks like a slum to us.
Oh, sure. It depends. Like, I mean, it's all relative.
You have to be told like this is actually not a slum. But I mean, there's
right.
infrastructure.
No, it
there.
Does look, you can tell the difference if you've seen a slum.
If you've
you
seen,
can
correct.
Tell a
right.
big difference.
But it was really amazing because we park, you know, in this muddy lot, but there's this high rise building mm-hmm. and we go up these winding stairs and it's like a lot. It's like 15 floors. Very, very high up at the top of this tall, skinny building. And you go into his workshop, and it was just immediately struck me as super clean, super
yes.
well organized.
Mm-hmm.
There was these beautiful work tables.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's sitting at their station, and they have this smart, as they would say in East Africa, a smart-looking jacket on.
Yes.
And their tools all laid out. And you can tell, too, that
that people have a sense of team there, that yes. there was seven or eight people working together and they all had the part that they were doing. And I just, even the, just the kind of tiny interactions between people, that it was a very respectful, professional yeah. work environment. Yeah. And I think Jessica and I, just because you see different types of ways, sometimes people are starting out and they're like, okay, we sit down kind of over here in this corner and just saw.
It's like guest bedroom days.
Yeah.
Like day 5 years ago.
Joseph had built this thing that was something to emulate. It was something
yeah.
too
it's
that.
So organized the way that they do their assembly line and the way they interact. So one person makes this piece and everyone is dependent on the other person mm-hmm. to make the final product beautiful.
Yeah.
Because if one little piece is just off, it's going to be, yeah. you know, damaged. We're not going to be able to accept it. And so the way they interact right. together in such a free-flowing right. way and
well,
talk
and
to each
Andrew,
other.
Well, and Anna and Andrew, that is what they aspire to. You
know, yes, they
want to be able
to
have a physical
go towards
workshop
more of that.
Someday.
Yeah.
So it's cool for them to yeah. get to, you know, have something to aspire to like that.
I think, mm-hmm. too, when you look at, you know, I think my experience in East Africa was many times work environments mm-hmm. are, because it's a communal space, there's, like, more resources put into it. It can be like cleaner and nicer. Where I worked, everyone ate lunch together every day, which sometimes was the main meal for everyone. There's a sense of like, whereas we go to an office and we're like, well, I want to yeah. be working from my laptop in my bed. Mm-hmm. But that work environment and kind of public spaces can sometimes draw people because there's more resources there mm-hmm. than there might be at, you know, a home situation. And I think that struck me too with Joseph, that he's creating this like, this sense of order and business and cleanliness that's such an example for people who are wanting to try to learn how to live life a little bit differently and kind of looking at the guys that Anne works with that, you know, they're coming from the slum environment, but they're being brought into this environment that I think can just be a model for like, hey, here's how to work as a team and, you know, do all of these things that yeah. could roll out into all sorts of areas of community and life.
I think it's very empowering for them also. And it's almost like a social network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in Africa, it's like who you know and the resources that they have that are going to, that you're going to fall back on when you have an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how many people do you know and how much money can you gather for this hospital bill or whatever? And so working in an environment like that with other people who are employed and mm-hmm. having those relationships is a security to them. It feels mm-hmm. like they are really like solid. They have a mm-hmm. real job and they can feel comfortable, you know, being able to raise their kids and do the things that they do without this like constant fear that they're going to fall out into poverty again.
Right.
I mean, other people that have jobs that come and go are constantly in fear that they're going to slip back down into poverty. And they don't have that feeling.
Yeah.
They feel like very secure
mm-hmm.
because this company is really solid because mm-hmm. it's been going for so long and Joseph is just really a strong leader.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really wonderful that they have that security, and then that security gives them a sense of power. So then they have a voice. They feel like a little bit higher in the world and that their voice matters
mm-hmm.
because they're in this like secure position.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a lot of difference in their family life, in their emotional life. It's not just about finances. It's not just about providing for their families, but having those social relationships that
yeah.
carry through in
that's
every
really
area.
Well, and I think everyone can relate to the fear behind not feeling rooted.
Yeah,
whether that's
for sure.
moving to a new city or like really struggling financially because maybe you were laid off or just whatever makes you feel not rooted. It's so scary. And so to know that, you know, someone in Kenya like knows what that feels like too, and that everyone has a desire to feel rooted and to feel like they're plugged into their community.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it's not just finances. It's feeling rooted where you are with the people that you're around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what this makes me think about
mm-hmm.
is, y'all know it, I want to go into more places.
You know.
So it's so hard, you know. I mean, I think we're dreaming. We're dreaming about the countries that we want to have an impact in. And then I think about what could Noonday be in 5 years, you know,
mm-hmm.
and where can we be on the map in places that are so hard. And so that's where you guys, you ambassadors, are just so important to this entire ecosystem, you know, because the more ambassadors we have that are really out there active and selling, then the more orders we can place. And then the more countries we can go in and scout, or the more we can really help scale up some of these businesses
mm-hmm.
and really create a long-term sustainable impact there. So I just had to
get that point across.
I think that's a beautiful note to end on. You know, we always bring it back to the ambassador, but it's because it always comes back to the ambassador. Mm-hmm. And the impact that all of you are making. You know, I say this almost every episode, and I hope it's not becoming trite, but we could not do what we do without you. And I hope this conversation today really shed light on the fact that this was possible because you've been selling. And mm-hmm. you have been expanding your communities to buy into Noonday, you know, not just financially, but to buy into the mission and to buy into the people who make these beautiful products. And Kenya happened because of our community.
It really mm-hmm. did. Mm-hmm. It really I think, did. Too, it's like, you know, the model of, you know, there's different nonprofits and things that make jewelry, and I think it's awesome. I think everyone should be doing the part they can play. But,
yes.
like, I think one of the things that makes dignified work is Noonday would be standing on mountains and mountains of jewelry, and the work done for that wouldn't be appreciated, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. But with the ambassador community, we truly can say people want these products. Like, this mm-hmm. is dignified. This is, you're not just making something that's a tchotchke. You know, you're making something that has value, and that the ambassador community makes that happen. They make this connection that allows these products to be valuable and allows this work to be dignified and valued in the world. I think that's such a special connection that you get to make.
So thank you guys. Thank you for what you're doing in Kenya and around the world.